meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We're going to go full bore on the Kaylee/Casey Anthony case tonight. I do have some breaking news. Just came across my email about a minute ago. And before I bring on my first guest, I want to share this email with you. Joseph Jordan, who you know as a person involved in the Save Kaylee Moms for Justice organization, he writes me this. Joseph Jordan, not-for-profit organization Save Kaylee, momsforjustice.org, founders are offering to pay in full for Casey Anthony or her father George Anthony to be polygraphed by Howard Swabash on the whereabouts and condition of Kaylee Anthony. Howard Swabash is a former Michigan State Police polygraph examiner and has performed over 6,000 forensic polygraph tests. Howard Swabash is a nationally renowned polygrapher with over 20 years of experience. He's a graduate level clinical psychologist and has experience in criminal testing. So there the offer is on the table, and I know that the Anthonys do listen to this show. We'll probably get more comment from that. We're going to start out tonight with Robin Sachs, Assistant Deputy District Attorney with Los Angeles County. A little bit later on, Leonard Padilla, the bounty hunter involved in the bailing out of Casey Anthony. Mike McIntyre, crime reporter from Winnipeg, will be here to give us an update on that horrific murder a few weeks back where the young Canadian boy was decapitated on a Greyhound bus near Winnipeg, Manitoba. And then we'll have Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch to give us an update as far as the search for Kaylee Anthony. So we got a full bore program tonight. Robin Sachs, welcome.
Hi, Dana. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Busy, busy, busy. The email and everything's going crazy. This story has exploded. In fact, tonight we have more breaking news, is that there are confirmed reports that the FBI lab has reported traces of chloroform in the rear compartment of the Anthony vehicle, the one that Casey Anthony was driving, plus forensic searches of Casey Anthony's laptop computer found many different hits on chloroform websites. We'll tie that in a little bit later on. So this case is getting more and more interesting. It's getting more and more troublesome as it looks like Kaylee Anthony is no longer on this earth. As a prosecutor, Robin Sachs, one person that we haven't heard from, and I think wisely in this case, is the prosecution side. We're not hearing a lot from them. But what would you do with all this craziness going on?
Well, as I've said before, the media, when it's your own case, is never your friend. No matter what you say and whatever you is put out there by the prosecution and the defense can come back to haunt you in a motion, in a trial, and certainly in the trial of public opinion. So in this case, it's nice not to hear from the prosecution because we wouldn't expect to hear from them directly, although the little pieces of information we're getting, I can imagine that they are, you know, working diligently in building a case, whether it's a no-body or body type of murder case. That's what seems to be on the horizon.
We've all looked at and talked about the aspect of forensics in this case. As far as confessions or statements go, the credibility of the person of interest in this case is on the table. There have been so many lies and admitted lies and proven lies that it's probably going to be a forensics case. All of a sudden, you get a hit of, we've talked about the decomposition on the program before, the air tests and hair tests and all this sort of stuff. But now, all of a sudden, you start getting forensics on chloroform, plus tying into that, corroborating that, is searches on the internet for chloroform. Why? Well, we can all speculate to that, but what does that do for a case?
Well, it certainly provides the missing link. It no longer has that aura of suggestibility and opens up that area for reasonable doubt, where the question of whether or not there was another body, a decomposition of another body, a suicide, a body of an animal, or whatever, even though it was confirmed with the DNA and hair that in earlier reports that was actually matched to Kaylee Anthony. But when then you start taking the fact that chloroform is found, and that's not even necessarily the exciting part, because chloroform, you probably could find a number of household reasons to find that. However, the chloroform plus the searches on the internet for chloroform, now you have someone who's done some homework and due diligence, because I can tell you that there may be some uses for chloroform, but none of us know what those are without doing an internet search, and only someone who is needing to find some sort of use for some sort of chemical like that would have it.
If you're just tuning in, Deputy District Attorney, L.A. County, Robin Sachs is here. The gal is back in. Casey Anthony has had her bond rescinded. She's back in custody. I'm going to be interviewing the bounty hunter a little bit later on this evening, and he told me that he is willing to bond her out again if she tells him where the body is. If she tells him where the body is she not then going to be immediately arrested for murder, and that may not have a bond attached to it?
Well, that would be the hope. The question is what sort of obligation would be for the bounty hunter to turn that information over to law enforcement? And clearly, what you're suggesting and what is there is absolutely a catch-22 for Casey Anthony, and hence why she hasn't said anything. So it's very interesting to me that someone who's been portrayed to have so many mental issues is quite calculated in how she doesn't answer questions and how she can figure out lies and ways to continually subject herself to more scrutiny in terms of her own credibility.
When they start building a case or they start putting a case together, obviously we're not hearing everything that the Orange County Sheriff's Department investigators and the FBI have, because they're going to keep some of that close to the vest. Now with the subject, the person of interest, Casey Anthony, back in jail and may not be able to be bonded out again because of the bail so high. And I think they tacked on a few more monetary-type charges today, bad checks or whatever they were. Is that a benefit for the investigators to have her in jail rather than out? Because the whole discussion of having her out, and maybe she'll talk to someone or lead someone to the body if indeed the young baby is dead, backfired, and now she's back in jail where I think she should have stayed the whole time.
Well, there's several issues that you bring up. First of all, whenever you're considering bail, there's two primary concerns in determining the amount of bail, and that is, number one, the flight risk and will that person make their appearances for court, and two, what their danger is to society. And it would be hard for me to argue that Casey Anthony belongs anywhere but in jail, given my belief in terms of her dangerousness to society. This is what someone is willing to do and behave to their 2- and 3-year-old kid. What are they likely to do with other people out there? So from a safety and a public policy point of view, there's no doubt that she belongs in jail. Now, from an investigative point of view, is it helpful for her to be out? Perhaps. Perhaps she would slip. Perhaps she would say something. But then you also have the issue of the reliability and credibility with whom the people that she spoke. Just as we saw, in the Natalie Holloway cases, our interviews there, interviews that are conducted by private people, interviews that people have agendas or financial gain, or interviews done by people who have criminal records, or interviews by co-defendants, all of those become subject to credibility issues. So while it may provide some useful information in terms of a slip, it's certainly going to be scrutinized. So I think when you balance those two factors together, the answer, like you say, is she belongs in jail.
Well, I started the show, I broke the news that Joseph Jordan, his organization, MomsForJustice.org, are offering to pay for polygraph tests on Casey and her father. Evidentiary-wise, is there anything to that? Everyone would love to see those individuals take a polygraph, but can a chronic liar, allegedly, pass a polygraph even though they're still lying?
Well, the reason why polygraph examinations are not admissible as evidence in court is because they lack scientific acceptance in the scientific community, that meaning that they're not considered reliable as scientific evidence. What I think, so from that point of view, from an evidentiary, what this is going to do in terms of a case, it's meaningless in terms of the case. However, there is one part of a polygraph test that I think is very, very helpful, and it is admissible in a hearing, and that is the pre-polygraph hearing.
Yep.
And at the pre-polygraph interview, excuse me, and that's the opportunity for which the investigator, the person conducting the polygraph, can ask the person who's going to be the subject questions and also kind of alleviate any concerns and what have you. And many times people start to say, well, is this going to show up? Well, what if I say that? Is it going to show up? And so forth, and all sorts of hypotheticals come out. And those statements are completely admissible as they are not part of the polygraph exam. So in kind of given that, what the reactions, what the facial expressions are, what the person's affect is like, may be interesting psychological indicators, even if they're not necessarily admissible.
Well, how huge. I'd love to sit in on that examination and watch what happens. You know, the polygraph is one thing, but the admission and confession after that is another thing. Robin Sachs is here. She's a ADA in Los Angeles County, and we're talking about, of course, the Kaylee and Casey Anthony case. Today, the Orange County Sheriff's Department, God bless them, and their sheriff came forward and made a $5,000 donation to Texas EquiSearch. Plus horseback riders, there's people with the Moose Lodge and everyone down there wanting to search and find Kaylee. And I said right from the beginning that Kaylee has the answers because mom's not giving any. How important is it to find, sadly, a body in this case?
Well, it's certainly the issue that we have in terms of a criminal case is the prosecution's burden to prove a case beyond a reasonable doubt. And while reasonable doubt is not all doubt, imaginary doubt, it must be reasonable, and it must have, and certainly cases have been and can be proved without a body, by putting together a nice case of circumstantial evidence showing that all the evidence leads to the result that we see. In this case, I think that if you were to list out, and I've said this before, and I've done this, and the list keeps growing, and you were to put together all the pieces that we know in the society, forget about all the pieces, the other pieces of evidence that we haven't even heard of or hasn't even been discovered yet, I think that the prosecutors can put together a case that to show with circumstantial evidence that Casey Anthony did something that caused the death of Kaylee Anthony. If there's no finding her, and every place has been searched, I think, in every plausible place, and given the time, and given the chloroform, and given the smell of death, and given the DNA, and given her statements, and all the other millions of givens, I think that the prosecutor would be able to successfully prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt. The one nice thing, one of the aspects of murder cases is that there is not a statute of limitations. So, given that, the Orange County Sheriff's Department has some time to build a case, and they're seeming like they're taking a calculated effort in terms of doing a proper investigation, and you know, no stone is going uncovered here, so that if that's the way the case needs to proceed, then I think it'll be done in a successful conviction fashion.
We hear a lot about the grandparents. I've interviewed Cindy Anthony. I've spoken to George Anthony, and it's so hard to... to comment right at this time or to form an opinion. Well, I'll take that back. You know, you can't form an opinion as far as any complicity in the parents' aspect. All you do is hope and feel compassion that parents and grandparents want to find their missing loved ones and get answers to why they are missing, etc. But a lot of questions have come forward as far as if grandma knew about it, or if grandpa knew about it, or brother knew about it, or somebody knew about it, can they go to jail too? Is there actually an obligation for anyone in the United States of America to come forward if they are aware of a crime? Now, lying to the police is one thing, but coming forward is another thing.
That's absolutely correct. The question actually in this case would be, is there a conspiracy after the fact?
Yep.
And if there is a conspiracy after the fact, I mean that they were not part of the crime and they were knowledgeable about the crime such to the extent that they then helped cover up the crime or covered up the investigation in order to benefit their daughter, then they may have criminal charges against them. But merely having their own belief, or let's say even taking a confession where they are not necessarily doing anything, it would be hard to call them mandated reporters to be able to make some sort of report. You would think that someone whose grandkid, and if they knew something that their grandbaby was missing and lost and knew what happened and all this money and effort and time was being spent to find them and to find her and not having done anything, you would want to hold that person liable for some of that.
When this case comes to fruition, and I believe that will happen sooner than later, I hope, because everyone deserves answers here, it will certainly bring forward a potpourri of evidentiary questions about how the media covered this case, about how the public handled it. Law enforcement is being criticized. Even the God bless them, the volunteer searchers with Texas EquiSearch and other groups are being criticized because of from the family, because they believe that their grandchild is alive. We're not going to see the end of this, although the case may be brought to court sooner than later. But what do you think, Robin, because you've done a lot of media work, has the media done a good job covering this? I've had several email here saying, why do you keep talking about this case when there's hundreds of others out there that need so much attention?
Well, there are a lot of cases out there that need attention. There's no doubt about that, and there are tons that we unfortunately don't hear about. However, this is a case where I think that the media has taken an interest, because just very similarly as it did in the Scott Peterson case, that until there is a body, there is this, you know, value on life that we Americans have, that until we know for sure, let's not give up all hope. And I think that if we don't keep the focus on that, it should there be that 1% chance, wouldn't we all feel awful that we didn't take that opportunity to secure this child's life? At the same time, in order to make sure that we are showing and setting examples for our society and protecting kids and placing value on children's life, keeping this case in the media puts some pressure on parents in terms of how cases are going to be dealt with. And I think that this case is particularly important to keep in the media, not from a from a sensationalism point of view, but from a view that greatly changes the misconception that all crimes are committed by men, and that moms and mothers and women cannot be dangerous, and that women will do anything at all costs for their children. I think this case goes against the grain of our stereotypes for the female gender, and I think that it's important for us to give attention for that alone.
Well said, as usual. Robin Sachs, ADA out of Los Angeles County, part of the New Justice Interrupted group. Give us a quick 30 seconds on that.
Well, Justice Interrupted, if I were to give you a little picture of us, it would be we are Charlie's Angels meets Ghostbusters. And the three of us have Stacey Dietrich, Susan Murphy Milano. Susan's our violence expert and victim advocate. Stacey is our detective and author, and I'm the prosecutor, and the three of us are seeking to stop situations where justice interrupts people's lives by focusing on crimes that are not as well known and helping people get the justice they need.
Well said, and we'll do more on that at another time. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. That's ADA Robin Sachs from Los Angeles County. We're going to take a break and be right back on the Dana Pretzer Show. Okay, I'm going to cut in real quick. I have Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch on the line, who's in Orlando, Florida, working hard on the case to try and find Kaylee Anthony. Hi, Tim. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Dana. Pleasure being here, even though we're tired.
Yeah, I'll bet. You've been working hard. Saw you on Nancy Grace the last couple of nights. You looked a little down last night, but you looked a hell of a lot better today. What happened?
Well, I was getting beat up pretty good. There was just some things going on, and we're willing to do anything for any family anywhere. It doesn't matter where. And I think I just really got irritated when I heard Cindy say that Kaylee is not missing, that she Casey gave her to a couple that was going to take care of her, and basically that, you know, we didn't need to be searching this way, and I just kind of lost it at that moment, and saying, you know, basically, why did you get us here if this child is not really missing? And we got families all over the country that really do need us. Why are we wasting our resources? And no, I was ready to just call the search off. And little Jalik's grandmother up in New York called me, just begging me to come back up there, and other families. And this morning, the sheriff actually called me himself and said, "Mr. Miller, would you please do me a favor?" And I said, "If I can, I will." And he said, "Do not leave this search." He said, "We're going to be bringing in probably up to 25 airboats. We're going to be bringing in our mounted posse. We know you spent thousands of dollars on this search, and we're going to help you out a little bit by giving you $5,000 just to help out and continue the search." Basically, he said he felt as though we was the only organization that was capable of finding Kaylee out there. And in no uncertain terms, says that, you know, they feel as though we are just looking for a body, and this body needs to be found. And he took his sheriff hat off and put his father hat on when a reporter asked him how much money has the county spent in this case. And he says, "I'm a father, and how much money would you spend on this case if it was your child? Can you put a price tag on it?" So the sheriff is committed to do whatever he can do to help bring in whatever resources I ask for to go ahead and cover every square inch of search areas and areas beyond that, even the three areas that they have to go ahead and find this little baby.
You have to commend the sheriff and the Orange County Sheriff's Department, because they are committed to bring answers to this case, and by helping your organization, that's just fantastic. Tim, one of the questions, and I know you don't like to, you always like to hold out hope. You'd like to keep, you know, we've seen the cases where miracles do happen, but in this case, with the evidence pointing towards the way that it is, it looks like it's unlikely now that Kaylee Anthony is still alive. Can you comment on that?
You know what? I agree with you 100%. And you know what? When we were in a meeting with the sheriff department today, and there was seven detectives there, the sheriff was there, the FBI was there, I actually got a call from one of our members in Dallas that asked me where else I wanted him to go in the Dallas area, getting Kaylee's flyers out. I'm actually working with a large corporation now that delivers different snacks and beverages, soft drinks and stuff to every grocery store and convenience store and stuff in the nation. And they're having a meeting at their corporate office to see if they will go ahead and have every one of their drivers, every spot they deliver, go ahead and post your flyer in the window and leave flyers at the counter. So we will continue getting stuff out all over the country. So Kaylee's not forgotten about, if that small possibility is that she's out there alive. But until she is back in the arms of her grandmother, We are going to try to search every single area to find that little body. And, you know, I think myself, and it's just me thinking, Dana, and I've been wrong before, and I think right now the very best that we could possibly hope for is to one day next week go to a funeral for this little girl that desperately deserves at least that dignity. And so this community can put their lives back together and have that little bit of closure.
Well, we have to, you know, all sit back and think a little bit and look at the big picture here. If this, you know, if Casey had given her to someone to look after her, why doesn't she come forward with a name and a telephone number or say, listen, this is just what happened. This is just, you have to put a common sense spin to this and understand also in your heart, you can see why you have to try and hold out hope. But there's a much bigger picture here. When you talk about the family, Tim, and I won't keep you much longer because I know you're really busy, Cindy and George Anthony, who I've both spoken to, it seems like they, you know, some will say that they're in denial. Some will say that they're not cooperating. There have been some, you know, some attacks, sadly, against your organization and others that have been trying to help. And that's not what this is about. And I don't expect you to comment on that. But really, if there was more help, more cooperation from the family, that would make this a lot easier, would it not?
Well, it certainly would. It certainly would. And, you know, I'm not the judge and jury in convicting her right now, but if something went wrong, Dana, if something went terribly wrong, and Casey did something that was not intentional, I would only hope that it would touch her heart and she would one day say, and one day soon, sooner than later, of course, you know, let me lead you to her little body. And I think the entire country could accept that. And they didn't know it. I hate to even admit this, but I will. I remember when my first daughter was born, and it was the very happiest day of my life. I still remember that day. But I remember when she was about 2.5 years old and in them terrible twos and getting into things and stuff, and I was working 7-12 at Ford Motor Company and tired and grumpy, and I'll never ever forget this. I said, damn you, and I picked her up in my bedroom and I threw her probably maybe 6 feet onto my bed, and I just remember thinking when she was, right when I let her out of my hands, that, oh my God, when she hits that bed, what if she bounces off and breaks her neck or something?
Yeah.
And by the grace of God, she didn't. And I'm saying every parent has lost their temper a time or two.
Yeah.
So if something's happened with that, I know that everybody could accept that. But, you know, right now with the other evidence that's coming forward, at times I get lost for words, and I guess this is one of them times. And the other thing that upset me about them giving this to another family is like, my God, you don't care enough about that child to get this family's name and phone number so you can at least call once a month to check on her and see if Kaylee is okay. So I don't buy any of it, Dana.
No.
I don't buy any of it. And yet, I still have people in Dallas and other areas putting flyers out and hoping for that one miracle. And it would be a pleasure for me to be embarrassed right now putting this search on if she's out there alive somewhere and comes home.
Absolutely. One last question. Media reports are saying that you're concentrating on a 3-mile grid search.
When I said that, and I was out of line saying that, and I apologize. Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking when I did say that. I predict we're going to find it within a 3-mile radius of where we're at right now because we're very close to the airport. And, you know, once in a while you want to take back some words, but it's too late. But anyhow, I think it's no secret, though, you know, law enforcement is looking around the airport and stuff, you know, since they did start searching, so... again, I kind of spoke out of school at that time, and hopefully don't get chewed out too bad by the sheriff.
Okay. Well, you know, it's something we all say that, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying it because everyone knows by the evidence as far as where you might be looking. How long do you plan on being there, Tim?
Dan, I plan on being here until we find Kaylee, and I believe that there's so much strength in numbers, and the phone is ringing off the wall. I don't know that this search will be as big as Jesse Davis' search was in Ohio. I guarantee you this much, it's going to be a hell of a lot bigger than it has been. And we can cover a lot more ground. We can put people closer together. There's going to be less chance of missing something. And I don't know, maybe this was some of God's timing too, because since we got here, the water has been so high. We was really worried about that hurricane. You know, our backs were up against the wall because we got a storm that's coming in. And that's another thing that we were just panicking about, that when, you know, another storm comes in, dumps more water, it'll be forever before the water drains off. And we'll just stop our search efforts. Well, the waters went down considerable amount, and the storm looks like it's going to miss us. And I think God answered our prayer in that arena, and now we're getting all these searchers and resources that are wanting to come in. And, you know, I'm overwhelmed with that, because I was certainly thinking the worst and thinking that every day we're going to get less and less people. But I think we're in the right track now. I think we're in the right time now. And I want everybody out there just to wish us the best of luck. You know, we've all adopted this little baby, and let's go ahead and bring her home and put her in that place that she deserves.
Well said, Tim.
She needs flowers surrounding her. I just don't think she has them where she's at right now. And Dana, she did not choose to be where she's at right now.
Absolutely.
So, Dana, again, it's always an honor to be on your phone and the support that we get. And one of the things you said, you know, there's some negative stuff going out there about our organization. And, you know, I'm old, my skin's pretty thick. And if I had time to listen, let alone answer all the criticisms against me, I wouldn't have time to be on a search. So,
absolutely.
Let's keep doing what we're doing and leave the results up to God.
Absolutely. Our thoughts and prayers are with you and your organization. Thanks again, Tim.
Thanks, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I want to make a quick comment about some media representatives that have gone public and questioned the motive of Texas EquiSearch and their search for Kaylee Anthony. In fact, one media representative decided to post on a blog saying that Texas EquiSearch was only in it for the donations. I say to that media representative, how dare you? How dare you question someone like Tim Miller and the people at Texas EquiSearch, the law enforcement, the people that are down there trying to get answers in this case? How dare you question their motives? We can question yours easily too, sir. Tim Miller and his group at Texas EquiSearch are dedication. They are the people beyond belief that will come out and help at their cost, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, to do things that others would never even think of doing. How dare you ever question someone like that, sir? That is beyond the pale. That is absolutely wrong. Go to Texas EquiSearch's website and take a look around. In fact, when you're there, turn your speakers up a little bit, and you might even hear my voice talking to you. I give 1,000% support to Texas EquiSearch, and anyone that comes at them, I'll come right back at them too, because that's wrong. Texas EquiSearch is okay in my books. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Leonard Padilla. He's the bounty hunter that got Casey Anthony out of jail, and he's got some, well, I thought some interesting things to say about this case. We'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Ooh.
Okay, we're back in our continuing coverage of the disappearance of Kaylee Anthony. We have on the line Leonard Padilla, the bounty hunter, who was involved with bailing out Casey Anthony, and now that bond has been rescinded. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Have you ever thought in your 30-plus years of experience in apprehending fugitives and bounty hunting and all that sort of stuff that you'd come across a case and be involved in a case like this?
Well, I've been involved in situations like this that are just as out of the box. Frankie Proctor right here in my own backyard in Sacramento was a situation, a 7-month-old baby all of a sudden turns up ripped off out of the house. And what it was a young gal that was in love with this guy that had caught a couple of years in prison. He gets out, and she told him while he was in prison that she was pregnant. And the next thing is, she sends a couple of thugs over there to steal the baby, but nobody knew what it was. I mean, nobody could figure out why two guys broke in with guns, ripped the phones out of the wall, and took a 7-month-old baby, and it took a while to figure it out, but we finally figured it out. And then I was involved in another one where the parents actually killed the 8-year-old daughter, but nobody knew what was going on. They were in jail. We bailed the mother out, and within an hour, she basically said, "This is what I did. This is what happened." Never found the body because, she said, they cut up the body, burned it, tossed it in the river.
Right. You know, and I'm not going to question your motives of why you got involved in this case, because you did, and you were able to.
No, we set out to go back there because she was saying, "Get me out, and I'll tell you, I'll help."
Right.
We got back there, posted the bond, even though there was some trials and tribulations in doing that. We had to wait for the home monitoring. We had to do a couple of other hurdle jumps. But we got it done, got her out. She never said a word about, hey, okay, let's, The only thing she kept repeating was Zenaida and her sister took her away, took the baby away from me at the park and gave me a list of things to say to the cops for the next 30 days.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, Leonard Padilla's here. He's the bounty hunter that was involved in bailing out Casey Anthony. One of the things that came up early, Leonard, and we haven't heard much of it since, is an apparent high-profile media person was involved in brokering your involvement in this case. Do you care to comment on that?
No. That's not true. I talked to an individual that I've known for 30 years.
Okay.
And we always sit around and talk about different things that are happening around the world. And when this particular conversation took place, I was actually talking to him about something else that came up, and he says, "Have you been following?" I says, yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it? And he says, yeah, he says, it sure cries out for your involvement. Well, when somebody makes a statement like that, then I go back and I have my office staff pull all the information we can, and we sat around and we looked at it. And they said, okay, if we go back there and post a bond, she could possibly tell us what's going on, because sometimes people will talk to us and not law enforcement.
Right.
So that's what we did. And that's how I got involved, strictly because it was brought to my attention. I'd already been following it. And I said, okay, let's go and, and you can see what the results were. It was zilch as far as her actually getting off of her Zenaida story. Now, here's something that's interesting. A lady in Texas calls up. She says, "Do you realize that Zanny the Nanny is a heroine in a children's book?"
Okay. Didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay.
I said, "You got to be kidding." She told me the name of the... Tracy, what's the name of that book that lady told me?
That's all right.
Two times two, double trouble?
Okay. I'll be darned.
Double trouble squared by... I can't remember the author's name.
Okay.
But we checked it out, sure, the book exists, and we ordered one. Now, the other thing is, when you look at the police report that was released, the 400-and-some-odd pages of discovery,
right?
Never once does she allude to Zanny the Nanny in a time period prior to June.
Okay.
None of her friends have ever heard her discuss Zanny the Nanny up until June and July. Now, the Zenaida thing... And the application for a rental at that apartment complex, that's easy enough because she was around there all the time.
Right.
So she obviously has contact with Garcia, the kid that handles those applications. And she flashed back on that when she got jacked up by her mom in July. She flashed back and said, there's Zenaida. I mean, the girl is a consummate liar. She can come up with a lie immediately. I mean, she really knows how to do it. The person that we had installed in the house as part of the deal of bailing her out I mean, she even told her, well, you know, this thing about me not working at Universal, I've still got my paycheck stuff. I mean, I was working there.
Jeez.
I mean, she was still on that because she is consummate. The girl's name that she kept throwing out there is an actress out of Natural Born Killers.
Oh, good God.
You know, she has the ability to, on the spur of the moment, come up with a story. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Your appearance on Nancy Grace last night has brought some, I won't say controversy, but it certainly brought some interest again in the media. You made some comments as far as the grandparents being in denial, and
Here's the situation. Okay. Wednesday, when the DNA results from the FBI, which are preliminary,
right,
and the University of Tennessee results came out, it was pretty obvious that, you know, what we're looking for is a body, not a live child. I immediately decided, hey, guys, and my whole team said, unless somebody put a body in, a human body that was decomposing or in stages of decomposition in the trunk of that car, and, you know, got some blood from the baby and diluted it in water and spread it around the trunk or something like that, well, you know, the labs can tell if that's a possibility or not, but, you know, it's too far-fetched. Okay. The car shows up at 7 a.m. on the 27th of June in front of that dumpster by that store,
right,
which is a mile and a quarter from Tony Lazaro's apartment. That means that the car was driven there possibly somewhere during the night prior to 7 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
The car doesn't leave because it's out of gas. Friday, the 27th, she can't really do anything about it because she's got to get ready to go to work at the club, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Saturday and Sunday, she doesn't do anything. Monday morning, the lady gets it towed off to the Johnson storage yard.
Right.
Why was the car at the dumpster?
Yep.
Not in front of the store, but at the dumpster.
Well, there's going to be a lot of questions to be answered, that's for sure.
I'm sure law enforcement has looked at it. I'm sure law enforcement has gone over it. What I'm bringing up is the fact that, hey, we're looking for something that was gotten rid of. Where do you get rid of things? You drive down the road, you find a dumpster, and you put it in the dumpster. I also believe that she's already told Lee and Cindy what she did and the fact that it was probably an accident, so they've absolved her of being guilty of killing the kid. Now they're saying, okay, now we've got to circle the wagons and save our daughter. We've lost a granddaughter. Let's save our daughter.
Right. And, you know, as strange as that sounds, it is somewhat understandable. But, again, it's certainly not helping with this case.
And the thing about it is, if she threw the kid in the dumpster, what's she guilty of? Illegal burial?
Yep.
If it was an accident, tell them where the body is. They can figure out it was an accident or not. Now, there's other consequences that come into play. The attorney hired a publicist on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard that.
Okay. Now, what is a story like this? What's the value of a story of this nature?
Mm-hmm. A lot.
And some people called and said, we'd like to pay you for an interview. We'd like to have you come here. We'd like to have you go there. During that period of time, I said, no, you contact the attorney or you contact Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
I have no interest in making money off of this thing at this time. Somewhere down the road, who knows?
Sure.
But at that time, no, I didn't want to have the conflict of financial gain out of it or reimbursement even. But I do know that the attorney hired a publicist, and sometimes the longer these things go in the media, the higher the price goes for an interview with Casey. I don't know what an interview with Casey would have as far as value, but she hasn't been convicted of a crime. In California, there's a law that says you cannot write a book and gain from your notoriety if you committed the crime and you've been convicted of it. But she certainly hasn't been convicted of any crime.
One last question for you, sir, and I appreciate you coming on. Will you get involved with any other bail applications for her in the future?
Well, here's the situation that I've extended. Tell us where the child is. We find the child. The company will bail you out and keep you out on bail pending the resolution of the whole situation. The companies in bail are, my nephew's not in it to prove guilt or innocence. He's in it for people to stay out on bail while they're going to court.
Right.
But at this stage of the game, we're going to do it different. We're not going to do it on happenstance. We're going to go on the basis that you tell us what, we come up with a child, then you get out.
When you extended that, any response from the family?
I've not heard anything, no.
Leonard Padilla, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's bounty hunter Leonard Padilla with an update on the Kaylee and Casey Anthony case. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Hi, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. He's a regular guest on this program. He's also a syndicated radio host in Canada on the Ralco and Chorus radio networks. His name is Mike McIntyre. You'll also read him in the Winnipeg Free Press. He's a crime reporter there. Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm very good, Dana. Good to be back.
Nice to have you back on the show. Last time we were talking about the tragic incident on the Greyhound bus where a young individual was decapitated. You were following the story. In fact, I think I picked you up in Edmonton. Let's get an update on that, and then we'll get on to some other things.
Yeah, there's certainly some developments on that front. Very little on the as it pertains to the accused, although that's about to change on this coming Monday, September the 8th, to be exact. Vincent Lee, the suspect here, will make his next court appearance. He hasn't appeared in court since we last spoke. And this should be a pretty interesting court appearance because of what potentially could happen. We are expecting to hear some update from a psychologist who apparently has been working with Vincent Lee as per the court order that was made last month. This, of course, to determine a couple of things. One, is this man capable of understanding the legal system, the legal process? Is he fit to stand trial? If the answer to that is no, we don't really go any further at this point. Lee would be returned to a mental health facility for who knows how long, possibly forever. If he is found fit to stand trial, then the question becomes, is he criminally responsible for his actions? And Dana, while we may not get the answers to those two very important questions on Monday, we'll at least get a sense of how close the doctor may be to coming to a conclusion. Of course, when we last saw Lee in court last month, this was a man who refused to communicate really at all, simply grunting and shaking his head. That was the extent of his communication. Since then, I am told that Lee has agreed to be represented by a lawyer. That was something he was resisting a month ago, and that's obviously a good sign. And as well, he's been moved out of a jail into a secure, locked psychiatric facility. And again, another encouraging sign that perhaps some progress is being made by the doctor in getting to the bottom of what ails this man. So that should be a fairly interesting court appearance. I'll be back out in court on Monday the 8th out in Portage la Prairie for that. So that's where the case stands. Now, there have been some very dramatic developments, in fact, just this week, as it pertains to the rest of the case. Just yesterday, the family of Tim McLean, the young man who was killed, filed a far-reaching lawsuit naming multiple parties in it, mm-hmm. including Vincent Lee, the man accused of killing their son on the Greyhound bus, but as well, they've named Greyhound, the bus company. They've named the federal government, including the Minister of Transportation, the Minister of Public Safety. And they've also named the RCMP as the target of this wrongful death lawsuit. And really, we could go through each one of these parties and break down why it is that the family feels that they're culpable, but it is a very interesting lawsuit. It's really not about money. They're only seeking about $150,000 total to be spread out amongst the entire family. It's more about principle, we're told, and making a point.
Yeah, in fact, making a point was the trucker who stopped alongside the highway to help. He's been very vocal in his criticism of the RCMP. Can you update us on that?
He has, and in fact, his criticism came just hours before the lawsuit was actually launched. The trucker, echoing comments that Tim McLean's mother made to the Winnipeg Free Press, one of my colleagues interviewing her last week, asking the question that a lot of people have been asking: what took the police so long? Why did they stand outside this bus on the Trans-Canada Highway for up to 5 hours while Vincent Lee allegedly decapitated and defiled the body of Tim McLean? Why did they stand back and watch this happen as this man, obviously dead at this point, was stripped of all his dignity as well. And that is a question the family's been asking, and they say they haven't been getting answers from the RCMP. And that those comments were echoed yesterday by this truck driver who happened upon the scene within minutes of this attack, this unprovoked attack on the bus. And he says, Dana, that he was asking police the same question. In fact, he says at the scene, and he's now speaking out for the first time, he says he was telling the police, shoot him. Yeah. Why don't you shoot this guy? And he said the police were balking at those suggestions. Obviously, as you know, and as a lot of listeners know, this incident only came to an end when Vincent Lee himself decided it would end. He flung himself out the broken window of the bus, and that is when police were able to apprehend him without injury or further incident. But the truck driver asking the question, the parents asking the question, and now the lawsuit asking that question, and the RCMP obviously being put on the spot here. To date, they really have not offered any comments, certainly nothing publicly, and we're told really nothing privately to the family either.
Yeah, it's a tragic case, and we'll see it unfold more and more as the weeks come. Mike, you are well aware of the prison break in Regina, Saskatchewan, not too far from you and I. Six dangerous alleged convicts broke out, almost Hollywood style. There is a huge inquiry going on now. The Minister of Public Safety and Prisons is on the hot seat. Let's talk about that.
It's a remarkable story, and I guess at last count, Dana, four of these inmates are still unaccounted for.
Right.
One was arrested, of course, almost immediately that night, leaving five on the run. And then I believe it was last Friday night, some 5 days ago, that the second of the six was arrested. I'm not sure if you were surprised. I was a little surprised that this man hadn't gone very far. He was found just in a residence in Regina, Saskatchewan, not that far from where he'd actually escaped from. I guess, you know, when we're talking about sort of low-level hoods, like a lot of these gang members, they don't necessarily have all the resources in the world, and maybe we shouldn't be surprised that they aren't sitting on a beach in Mexico somewhere having made good on their escape, and that they do stay close to home. But the question, of course, now is, or one of the questions is, where are these other four? Why is it taking so long to find them? And I guess for the sake of public safety, what are they up to? You know, they've got to be making some money somehow to just kind of get by. Are they committing other crimes while they're out? And are they getting any help while they're out? Are others in the gang world that they associate themselves with covering for them, hiding them out? And there really are a lot of possibilities. Did they go west to Alberta, where we know they have some strong gang ties? Did they go east to Manitoba, where they certainly have some strong gang connections? Did they go north, like to the scene of where at least one of them is facing charges for a brutal double murder that occurred last year? What is the status of all the witnesses in that case? I don't imagine they're sleeping very easily these nights, knowing these guys are on the loose.
Absolutely, and there's a lot of red faces when it comes to management at the correctional center, the government, and you know, people in general. This is a correctional center that is long overdue for repair, although there has been some. But like I say, it's right out of Hollywood. The fact where you scrape on the bricks long enough, you can make a hole and get some bed sheets, and away you go.
Well, it is in some ways out of Hollywood. Unfortunately, it may be out of a Hollywood comedy,
yeah,
as in comedy of errors, because this was not a dramatic jailbreak that had been planned out for years, like you might see in sort of a Hollywood thriller, where they you know, build this secret tunnel or something like that that goes under the jail. They basically kicked out a wall, which should never occur, of course, in any kind of facility. It was far too easy, Dana. And, of course, a lot of questions now being asked, a lot of questions being asked by the union that represents prison guards, including the fact that it's been reported that 10 days prior to this jailbreak, there is apparently word going around within the walls of the institution that something may be amiss, that something may be up. Guards on the front line say they were never told about this, and if prison management knew it, they kept it to themselves. Guards are very happy, of course, about that. And really, a lot of finger-pointing going on right now. I think everybody, though, has their fingers crossed that these guys don't do anything terribly violent or serious while they're out, because the ramifications would be enormous if that were to happen.
Absolutely, and those that are laying awake at night with one eye open, I hope, are some of the criminals, because I'm sure law enforcement is hot on their trail, but not only hot on their trail, but the government needs to be hot on fixing this place up and reviewing corrections in Canada across board. And that takes me to my next topic, Mike, overshadowed by the U.S. election, of course, even up here in Canada, is that we're going to be having an election very soon. And last week on my program, I featured a detective from Buffalo who's running for Senate. And we always like to talk about police officers that are getting into politics. There's a former police chief from the same community where these escapees got away from, who's running for the Liberal Party. And he's calling the Conservative, the current government's crime agenda, patronizing, and saying that community-based reduction and prevention strategies would be far more effective than long jail terms and mandatory sentences. I consider that kind of touchy-feely and beyond the pale. Mandatory sentences and tough crime is what the Conservative Party was about, is about, and your thoughts on how they did their first term.
Well, they've certainly made a lot of promises, and there's been a lot of tough talk. We're actually seeing some of that talk now translate into new legislation, and some of it, I think, is certainly well-intentioned. A lot of it, I think, is just chest puffing and that sort of thing, and I don't know how well thought out a lot of it is. Let's just go back for a second to this jailbreak, Dana, because I think you can connect these two issues as follows. Space right now in Canadian prisons is extremely limited. Most jails are packed to the hilt, bursting at the seams. And as a result, corners are often being cut. Inmates who are not supposed to be kept together on the same floor in the same unit are often being kept together in the same floor in the same unit out of necessity. There's always the brink of, gang violence within an institution that can break out. Trying to manage all the different players and the different gangs within an institution is tough. You've got people being double and triple bunked where that shouldn't be happening. And the result is you've got guards who are working in fear of their own safety. You've got inmates who are able to escape as easily as it seems like they were. So, if the Conservative government is going to make all these amendments to the law, that is going to mean longer sentences and more people behind bars.
Yep.
I really have seen little in the way of promises being made and solutions being proposed on where we're going to put all these people.
Yep.
And so to take it to what your guest from the U.S. proposed, I mean, certainly we'd all like to think that dangerous criminals are going to be locked up as long as possible and kept off the streets. That's the best way to deter them from hurting us. The reality is, though, people in Canada get out. No, very few criminals spend their entire life behind bars. And then as a result, I think the focus should be on what are we doing with these inmates when they are in custody? Are we doing anything to make sure that when they do get out, they're better people? I think right now very little is put into that avenue, and it's not a very politically popular one. The Conservative government isn't going to score many points if they just stand up and say, you know what, instead of hammering them with these tough sentences, we're going to make sure that there's some real rehabilitation going on. I mean, they'd get eaten alive by the public, but you know what? In the long run, that rehabilitation may go a lot further than simply cramming another few dozen inmates into an already crowded jail cell.
old jail cells, antiquated systems. I look at an example, and you and I have talked about him on this program, Peter Whitmore, someone who should be in jail, should stay in jail, and you know, it's a whole mandatory sentence. Are you going to have the room for them in the jails? It's a whole big picture, not as easy as any government talks. Like, if they're going to talk the talk, let's see if they can walk the walk, and I'm not sure if any of them can yet.
No, I think in some ways they're still dealing with a lot of armchair quarterbacking that goes on, even on the political level, and what may sound good in theory and look good on paper is sort of poorly done in execution. And I just think that, as you say, we have a system right now that is cracking, is bending under its own weight. And I think, you know, if something isn't done to address some of the prison overcrowding that's going on, we're going to see more incidents like what happened in Saskatchewan with these sort of jailbreaks. We're going to hear about more prison riots. And, you know, a lot of the public says, well, boo-hoo, I don't care. As long as they all attack each other, what do I care? Well, you know what? These are still our neighbors and our family members and friends that are working in these institutions. And I don't know that any of us would want to wish that upon our worst enemy, to have to go to work in a facility like that. And again, need I remind people that most of these inmates are going to get out one day. Let's at least try and make the time spent behind bars useful in some ways. We're all paying about $100,000 a year to keep one inmate behind bars. I think we'd all like to think that our money is actually going to something worthwhile. It doesn't cost that much money to feed them three square meals a day. What is that money being used for, and how can it be better utilized?
The Crime and Punishment radio show, heard Sundays on Ralco and Chorus Radio Networks, isn't the only thing that you do, of course, as a Winnipeg Free Press reporter, but you're also an author, and you've got a new book coming out, or at least on the way to the publishers. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, you mentioned one Peter Whitmore a few minutes ago, Dana, and that is the subject of my latest book. It's called Devil Among Us, How Canada Failed to Stop a Pedophile, and it is, I'd say in some ways, a very damning indictment of our justice system, of our legal system, of our correction system in this country. And it doesn't look at Peter Whitmore in isolation. It certainly looks at his most recent case, which was by far the most serious, the one that sort of catapulted him to the front of everyone's mind in this country. And that happened in 2006 with a shocking abduction of two young boys. Really shocking deception of two families that led to these abductions, very well documented, of course, the two boys being taken from their homes, and ultimately a manhunt, the very first Amber Alert ever issued in Saskatchewan, and ultimately a dramatic rescue and a standoff and an arrest. But Whitmore's history goes back far beyond just 2006. In fact, he first came into the system in the late 1980s, and my book, Devil Among Us, will examine really Peter Whitmore from start to finish. And, you know, I thought I knew a lot about Whitmore before I started writing this book, and I just found myself so many nights as I'd write shaking my head, shaking my fist in frustration over some of the things that were done and not done with this man. And I think it's, of the four books that I've done, I feel this is by far the most important one that I've written, and I hope Canadians and everyone who reads the story will feel the same, because I think it's a real important, no-holds-barred look at the system that we live and operate in right now.
I would be remiss without asking your thoughts on the Kaylee slash Casey Anthony case out of Orlando, Florida. Yours truly has got knee-deep involved in it from the broadcasting perspective. Tonight's show covers a lot of that. In fact, I've been involved in a little bit of controversy in this case, too, and that's great. I love this. But when you see a case like this, and you see the media coverage, and I interviewed the bounty hunter, Leonard Padilla, and asked him if he's ever been involved in such a circus like this before. Those kind of guys that love the media, love the press. We don't see that much of that sort of reporting in Canada, but Canadians as well as Americans and people around the world are fascinated with that story.
They are, and I always find myself struggling, you know, between the need, I guess, for people to know, and obviously it's an important case, and it's one that, you know, it looks like it's going to have a very tragic ending, unfortunately, to it. At the same time, the saturation of media coverage on one case just blows me away. You know, how many other children have gone missing in the last few weeks that are not getting one scintilla of this coverage? And I don't want to take anything away from this young girl. It's horrible what happened, and obviously it's not her fault that this case is getting all the coverage. I just wonder sometimes what the priorities of not only the media are, but the public as well. And we all sort of get caught up in the hysteria of these kinds of cases, and what we're seeing surrounding this case. I mean, people camping outside the mother's house, you know, day and night after she'd been released on the bond, and it's a soap opera playing out before our very eyes, and it's got all the elements, I guess, that are required these days to feed the 24/7 news cycle that we live in. I just feel, I guess, for some of those other families out there who are probably searching for their own missing child, their own answers in their own unsolved cases, and really are not even getting a whiff of coverage. And I mean, such is the beast, I guess, and the business that we all follow and that we work in. But sometimes I just don't get it.
Yeah, absolutely. What's coming up on this week's show?
This week's show, one of our popular segments returns that we do on a monthly basis, Ask the Judge, where we get to throw questions at an actual sitting member of the bench. Always a fun exercise, and always love the questions that our listeners come up with. Some real good legal meaty questions for the judge, so we will certainly be looking at that, and all kinds of other stories we're looking at, including another police-involved shooting that actually happened in your neck of the woods today, Dana. Just today, police taking the life of a man in Saskatchewan, and of course, these cases always generate all kinds of debate and questions, so we'll no doubt be looking at the circumstances surrounding that killing.
Yep, always stories for us to report on, and I guess that's why we love what we do. Mike McIntyre, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dana. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's syndicated radio host Mike McIntyre. His website is mikeoncrime.com, and the radio show is Crime and Punishment, which you can be hearing on the Ralco and Chorus radio networks. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And we are right back. We're going to go a little bit long tonight because I think some of you may want to call in and give your opinions and thoughts on the Kaylee Anthony case. And we'll open up the phone line to you right now at area code 306-842-7884. That's 306-842-7884. You can call in and speak your mind. We're going to give you that opportunity. I don't usually take a lot of calls during the show, but I think this is an important show for us to do just that. Hi, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Dana, it's Red. How are you?
Hey, Red, how you doing? Red is the backbone of ScaredMonkeys.com. He and Dugga and Klaus and others. And in fact, you were in Orlando helping with the search for Kaylee Anthony, were you not?
Yes, I was, Dana. And actually, we had talked about doing this interview tonight, and I had said to you know what, I was a little bit way too sick because of pretty much complete exhaustion from only getting about 12 hours of sleep over the last 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard your little rant, and you know what? I had to pull myself off the couch and say, you know what? We're doing the show tonight.
Well, you know, and those that are tuning in a little bit late will get into exactly what my rant was. And in fact, I'm not done. I encourage you all to listen to tomorrow's commentary at Scared Monkeys and ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, because we will talk more about that. But, gull darn it, I'm trying not to swear here. I'm biting the inside of my cheek. When you come to a group of people like those at Texas EquiSearch, and you're part of that, those that dedicate their resources, their time, their willingness, free of charge, to go in and help find the missing, you start questioning their motives. I'm going to be on you like a bird on a bug, because that's just wrong.
And you know what, Dana? You have every right to do that. you know, we do what we do on the internet, and, you know, being the editor at Scared Monkeys. But you know what? When I'm at Texas EquiSearch, I am a card-carrying member of Texas EquiSearch and proud of it. And when we're down there, there's one rule, and it's leave your ego at the door.
Yep.
Which, you know, those that throw stones, it would be very, it would be best if they ever left their ego any place. And the people, when we, like I said, it was a little bit of an adventure getting down to Orlando because it was a little bit of a last minute thing, but it was well worth it because it's always, it's the toughest job you'll ever love, and it lasts with you a lifetime. And you, do we get rich from it? We get wealthy from it because of the people we meet and the people we come across and the people that are so darn caring that they'll take time out of their lives to do the right thing, even in the face of, which was obviously a really bad situation in the community with between the community and the family, but the people did it for Kaylee. They didn't do it for the family per se. They did it to help find this three-year-old little girl. And Dana, I mean, we, between searching through swamps, searching through woods, searching parks, near water, you name it, by the airport, not by the airport, by points of interest, where cell phone tower pings were, every place and any place these guys went. And it was, you know, it, everything to try to find this girl without disregard for basically yourself. Because when I think back on it, I really just didn't give it much thought that, oh, you know, that there would be alligators in the water. you know, that we would come across some of the stuff that we came across in the woods with the homeless population.
Right.
It was an eye-opener. And, you know, having done this, you know, in Aruba searching for Natalie, I mean, you know, this was a whole other game because it was a completely different type of search. But the people were there. The volunteers were there. Could there have been more? Yes. Are there going to be more?
Yep.
Yes, there are, because we've heard some pretty great news that the Class Kids Foundation is going to be going down there. They had called up for more resources. Obviously, you heard Tim say the Sheriff's Department gave them really the seal of approval, and they're bringing in more resources. So they are hell-bent on trying to find this little girl, and that's what it's all about. It's about finding Kaylee, and damn those who would say anything else.
Yep.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah, question the motives of an organization that's trying to keep hope alive, and you're playing with fire, and you're going to get burned, and I will fire up the flamethrower a little bit later. But anyway, this is something, and all you have to do is sit down and talk to yourself or Tim Miller or anyone when you look at dedication. And if you you go to the Texas EquiSearch website, and I encourage everyone to do that, in fact, turn up your speakers, you'll hear me talking, in fact, you will see and you will look at stories not just about Kaylee Anthony and about Natalie Holloway, but all sorts of stories that go on and on and on and on and on, and the dedication of these people commit themselves to, it just burns my rear end when I hear somebody question their motives, and it's got to go answered, and I'm going to be the guy that does that.
And you know what, I guarantee you, I'll second that motion, Dana, because having been a part of it, knowing what these people do, and the time they take away from their own private lives. And that's what I do when I do this.
Yep.
You know, I take time away from my life to go to help Tim, because I know Tim does this for anybody. It doesn't matter whether it's high profile, low profile, or no profile.
Yep.
This man searches for kids, adults, black, white, yellow, pink, you name it. And all they get is donations.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's such a dirty word, donations, donations, donations. Okay, I mean, the crap that came out of certain individuals' mouth this afternoon, I've had it.
Yep.
Like I said, I was on my little sick bed until I heard your rant tonight. And I was like, you know what? Enough is enough. People who say this are guilty of it themselves. And for anyone to talk about anybody making money off the exploitation of missing children, take a good look in the friggin' mirror.
Yep, because you're not going to like what you see. Red, get well, my friend.
Thank you, Dana. You take care. And I certainly look forward to your commentary tomorrow.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, 306-842-7884, 306-842-7884. Hi, caller, you're on the air.
Great. Good afternoon, I should say, Dana. I absolutely love you and love your show.
Thank you.
I wanted to go ahead and bring up on the Scared Monkeys forum, we do have a thread for donate to the TES. Many of the Scared Monkeys are working together daily to get food out to the volunteers. I know Pepsi has donated several beverages and whatnot, and currently we have something set up with Meals on Wheels. And I was just wanting to encourage your listeners to go on the forum, donate, you know, get involved.
Sure, exactly. Do you have a website or a link for those that may not be part of Scared Monkeys that they can go to?
I say just go to www.scaredmonkeys.net and be a guest. Get in there. Take a look.
Absolutely. And donating to an organization like that, many monkeys have. I'm hearing of some pretty decent donations even tonight, and I don't want to embarrass anyone, but it just shows the commitment not only from those at Texas Equisearch, but from those that care about helping. And, again, that's what this is all about. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, 306-842-7884. We'll take a couple of more calls before we end up the evening. And, you know, it's just bottom line, as we all hope and pray that there will be answers in this case. And this negative stuff has to stop. And when you start questioning the ethics or the motives of an organization like Texas Equisearch and people like Tim Miller, that is just plain wrong. There's no one on earth that has felt more heartbreak but has helped more people than Tim Miller and the people at Texas Equisearch, and they deserve all the credit that they can get. And if it means a donation, then donate. I know I have, and I know many of you have, and many of you will, because that's just how important this is. Okay, we got time to sneak in one more call if you'd like, 306-842-7884. I do remind you, though, that if you're not listening live and you're listening to the show on podcast or replay or whatever you want to call it, not to call, because the phone line is open only during live broadcasts. And of course, our website is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. That's www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can pick up the show live. You can listen to podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries, etc. And I really encourage you all to check out tomorrow's commentary, where I will be addressing the first and last time the comments made by a certain Hollywood publicist degrading the people at Texas Equisearch. That is just wrong, and how dare he even think of doing such a thing. We're all in this, or most of us are in this, I can't speak for everyone, for the right reasons. And the wrong reasons come about when you start questioning the motives of those that are trying to help. My name's Dana Presser. I thank you all for listening. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Presser Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.